We're from the Isle of Man. Both my sister and I have lived there all our lives.
All our lives?
We wouldn't live anywhere else.
That's because of the deviants, you see.
Deviants? Yes.
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 A simpleton couple sat outside their trailer on a dreary industrial seaside, formed a sketch for an episode of the BBC's Fast Show in the 90s.
God is totally against homosexual practice.
Undoubtedly, it was inspired by a report from the preeminent gay rights campaigner and actor, Sir Ian McKellen, who during a trip to the Isle of Man, had an extraordinary exchange with brother and sister, Frank and Dorothy Duggan.
Do you have any friends who are gay?
Well, we wouldn't use the word gay, actually, because right, well, we believe that it's a perversion of a very lovely word. We would say sodomite.
You see, I have to tell you, I'm gay myself, and there are many ways of loving somebody other than that particular sexual act.
All these things are so vile and so filthy that not only do they spread AIDS, I've no doubt, but other diseases as well.
Fundamentally, that which you are commending, I would hate with a profound hatred, because I believe that it is utterly contrary to the will of God. Unless there are curbs, unless there are safeguards, it will eventually lead to the destruction of civilization.
Given their unabashed, profound hatred of homosexuals, the Duggans and their apocalyptic vision were invited to come before a Timald Select Committee to give evidence, to inform prospective law changes to the Sexual Offences Bill.
The reputational damage was regrettable. And the thing with reputational damage is that it lasts for a very long time. And whatever you do to reform subsequently, that old stereotype, those old images, persist.
Long-standing political commentator and former government press officer Alistair Ramsay was a journalist at the Isle of Man newspapers at the time. In a recent column, he described the island as a place that was seen as a backwater of bigotry and intolerance.
That was certainly how it was seen through the filter of the off-island media, who became more and more interested in what was going on here. And as is the way with the media, I suppose they home in on the most colourful and extreme manifestations of any debate, and some of the people they spoke to were very strange indeed, and arguably not representative of the majority, the silent majority of Manx people.
And I guess one of the things you highlighted in something you wrote about recently this year was the idea of sort of strange Bible-clutching types, and that being the sort of stereotypical Manxman. Yeah. I mean, yeah. How prevalent was the church's hold culturally?
Well, I didn't realise we had so many strange Bible-clutching types on the island at the time. Clearly, it was a different community then, a more conservative one. But one of the great mysteries, I suppose, was how representative that vociferous noise that drove the MHKs was of the wider community. Because at the end of it all, in the 1991 general election, that issue didn't seem to register at all, because the people who were in favour of change got back in comfortably, and the people who argued strongly against it got back in comfortably.
In 1987, a rainbow of language ensued in the House of Keys as the debate into law reform of the Sexual Offences Bill got underway, with MHK Edgar Quine extolling the virtues of a Manx society free of homosexuals.
If we must stand alone to maintain our quality of life, then so be it. For sure, I will not be stampeded into accepting a relaxation of the law on homosexuality and the acceptance of other repugnant practices on the pretext of upholding human rights and freedoms. However, rights and freedoms should not extend to permit individuals and minority interests to do what they wish in private or otherwise, when the overwhelming majority of the community view such activities as repugnant and harmful.
Yeah. There was certainly there was an element in the older generation, I suppose. I mean, I think a lot of this was a generational thing of prejudice against homosexuality, and it was whipped up as well by the kind of AIDS hysteria at the time as well, which is we shouldn't be forget about. So I'm sure there was a quite a strong element in public opinion who took that view, but it did manifest itself in the House of Keys as well. And I do recall from a minority of MHKs, the language was really quite disgraceful, which made me at times despair. You know, if this was our country's parliament, what did that say about the country?
Any relaxation of the law on homosexuality is wholly unacceptable to me, and I will not give such questionable and such objectionable practices a veneer of legality and respectability, for it would be the thin edge of the wedge, and I am sure that it will lead to a charter for wimps and perverts to further infect society.
The unrecognisable rhetoric of some MHKs was, however, countered by some progressives, whose views sounded fit for the 21st century. Thank you, Mr.
Speaker. Now, in all this, the official voice of the churches, fringe as well as established, has been a disappointment to me. Maybe it is early days, and maybe they will find the strength to say, we believe in privacy, equality, and not oppression.
Hazel Hannan, an MHK for Peel and a Manx nationalist, was seen as one of the champions for change. Although reform was on its way, the decriminalisation of homosexuality was not under consideration.
I want equal rights now. I believe we are mature enough to face what some members see as insurmountable and distasteful decisions.
I think they were horrified that it should be raised, but I felt very strongly about it, that the law should be changed. And so I kept going.
We should be seen to govern in a mature, responsible manner, such as to command respect beyond our shores.
Just coming back to your time as a journalist, what was the paper's line and indeed the culture amongst other journalists?
I think because we were kind of young-ish, relatively progressive people, the media were pretty much pro-reform, and certainly my paper, because I wrote a lot of the editorials, we were very strong on reform and extremely critical of those who resisted it. So the idea that the entire island was kind of locked into some North Korean state of terror would probably be overstating it. I mean, both sides of the debate were freely expressed. And I must say, I enjoyed criticising the anti-change brigade quite a lot.
For Peter Caron, these were very politically charged times.
Well, they had to edit the Hansard. They'll deny that.
So there's that famous Edgar Quine rant.
Oh, there was worse than Edgar Quine. There was horrendous rants.
Well, when you look back at the type of language that was used, well, I mean, how does that make you feel to be involved in those debates?
Well, they were just pathetic, weren't they? They're disgusting. The reason why we wanted to reform is because we believe in the Court of Human Rights. I told them years ago, if I have to choose, you lot or a bunch of froggy judges without a word of French to look after my human rights, give me the froggy judges every time. It was a shameful situation.
With the Isle of Man's apparent inability to look after its internal affairs and make the leap into the 20th century, as one news outlet would describe it, pressure was beginning to mount from Westminster. The island looked increasingly unlikely to align itself with the international obligations set out by the Convention on Human Rights, which upheld the individual's right to privacy. For 4 years, the Manx Parliament consistently voted down a repeal to anti-homosexuality laws, with trader law-style resolutions from members scuppering progress. And so, the Home Office issued a letter of warning ahead of the 1991 elections.
If the Isle of Man does not enact legislation on homosexual behaviour, the United Kingdom will do so on the island's behalf at the earliest suitable opportunity.
The unthinkable notion of the United Kingdom imposing legislation upon the Manx people was now a very real threat. A constitutional crisis was looming should the island continue to drag its feet. It tested the resolve of the Chief Minister and indeed the very independence of the island.
Or whether it was that we came to believe that the law ought to be changed because it was right to do so.
Yes, did that ever enter the question, the morality aspect?
It certainly did for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the longer we debated it and the more horrid the headlines were, the more I was convinced that it was right to change the law.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that what we had was cruel.
Mm-hmm. Sir Miles Walker, the island's first ever chief minister, says that pressure to change was quite gentle from the UK. In his first meeting with the Home Office, the birching legislation, capital punishment, and the outlawing of homosexuality were highlighted as statutes to update. He was told it would be in the interest of the Isle of Man to then put that right. After all, the UK said they were not prepared to answer to the Court of Human Rights in Strasbourg on behalf of their Crown dependency should an appeal ever be lodged again.
The constitution of the Isle of Man is one of convention, and the longer we can last without the UK legislating for us, the stronger that convention becomes. I didn't want the UK to legislate for us.
But that was a very real prospect, though.
Oh, I think if we hadn't reformed our legislation, the UK would have stepped in at some stage and said, we'll do it for you.
And what would that have meant in terms of setting a precedent for the Isle of Man?
Oh, it would have set our constitution back 50 years.
As for Hazel Hannan and her pro-reformist stance, she became a focal point of contact for those in the gay community who sent her anonymous letters outlining their fears of coming out in the Isle of Man.
I mean, I don't think people necessarily have to declare their sexuality or not. You know, I don't think it's a big issue. I think it's very personal. Some of the letters from homosexuals, but the other letters were off the wall, you know, people objecting to what I was trying to do. I used to get nasty phone calls and anonymous, you know, quite nasty.
And that didn't stop you?
Oh, no. No.
Those who do not want privacy for males can always petition the European Court with their grievance, as long as we have the individual right of petition. Guernsey members of the states were urged to hold their heads high in the wider community and rise above insular instincts, irrationality and bigotry. And I tell honourable members, there is life after declaring support for a change in the Sexual Offences Act and support for human rights.
Were you surprised about Manx attitudes towards homosexuality?
Yes. I mean, it's something that I never thought about. It wasn't an issue. Never been an issue at election. It was something that was never raised by a constituent on either side of the debate before, you know, we raised it in Tynwald. It just wasn't an issue.
Meanwhile, Mr. Karam was warned if he associated with gay people, he would be targeted by vandals.
It was a very difficult time, and you had to have principle and moral fibre to be able to stand up. I remember talking to Hazel, saying to Hazel, and it was maybe a stupid remark to say, I could do with your husband to answer my phone calls, because they were horrendous. And you had people ringing on the hour throughout the night, just like your tyres were slashed. One of my siblings said, I didn't know you were their best customer of Man and Tyres, or down on the chaos. You would get your tyres slashed on a regular basis.
As the debate intensified, Sir Miles Walker recalls the Tynwald Day of 1991.
I remember being harassed, that's a strong word, yeah, at the gate of the church on St John's Day.
By the demonstrators?
Yeah, I was for change. Why harass me? I was for change. I wanted to see the thing go through. But it heightened the debate, it heightened the public debate, and that's part of the democratic process. Whether, in fact, it helps to get legislation through in a small community like this, I rather doubt.
Did it not perhaps create a bit of media attention to the issue? Did that not add to any pressure on politicians, do you think, locally?
It added pressure to politicians, but it also added weight to the people that were arguing against the change in the law. Who do these people think they are, bullying us into changing our law against our will? All this sort of stuff.
Clippings of history from those days, at least for Alan Shea and the island's gay rights campaign, have been confined to three donated boxes. Press releases, contact books and letters of solidarity are now in the safe hands of the Manx Museum.
So I skeet them. That. So is that from National News, that clipping there? Because that headline's obviously very important, isn't it? Because that is the law change.
That is the law change, yes. candidate to. So.
So that was the moment you'd campaigned up to, basically. That was the lobbying.
That's what we wanted, was that. And the MLC then went to the Legislative Council. I think some of them voted against, but it carried.
So what feelings does that bring to you when you read that headline? That
I was proud, and loads of the locals were proud that I went through.
Yeah. And was that, personally, was that relief as well, do you think?
Very relief, very happy. When you look at this now, I think now, outside there, right now, today, how much it's worth it. It was worth it. All the torture and the pain I went through, and the aches and upset, and losing friends as well that died, it was worth it. Because the young gays out there now are not going to go through what we went through.
Mm-hmm. There's been a few times during TT where I've ran into people who've come over and that, and they've been like, you know, oh, what's it like being over here LGBT? Because I've heard, you know, you get chased in the streets and stuff like that. And I look at them like, no, it's not been like that for years.
Yeah, well.
Cara Verretto is an LGBT youth worker here on the island.
We've come a long way, really long way, especially now with, you know, working at the LGBT youth club that I do now. You know, we're talking about a pride next year on the island, and I really hope that Alan himself is like blown away by that, you know, with how far we've come. But obviously we need to get one thing in order, and that is to get rid of these convictions and that out the way. But at the same token, having said that, not to be swept under the rug like it never happened, because that was a mistake that should have never have happened in the first place, that the government and the police have done. And you know, I think that's something as well that not only not to be forgotten, but, you know, never to be repeated again. Mm-hmm.
This idea of a pardon, so to speak, that's something that's important to you, even though obviously there's that element of disconnect with you, because obviously you were born after all this happened, you weren't affected by this, yeah. You sort of lived in the modern Manx world, so to speak, yeah. On a personal level, and then I guess broadly speaking, how does it feel? What's the significance of that pardon, do you think?
I think the significance of it is almost a bit like when we legalised same-sex marriage. It's like, it's happening, it's moving forward, we're getting a bit more modern, and I think it's also kind of overturning what the island is kind of sometimes almost renowned for. So as a person who's like living today, you know, all I have to deal with maybe on a day-to-day basis with my partner is the odd weird look in the street, or, you know, worst case scenario, parents ushering their kids away, rather than being physically terrified about being attacked or the door being, you know, kicked down. It's come a long way, and I think it's incredible, because this is a big step forward for this closure for everybody who's been affected at the time.
One thing that was really interesting, what you said before, was basically about the idea of, you know, there is still that, perhaps an undertone of that reputation of the Isle of Man being this, seen as this place or whatever, but with an apology, or at least a pardon at the very least, coming in, that will help slowly deter those, yeah, kind of preconceptions.
I definitely would hope that that'll be the next kind of wash, maybe the next generation that have that preconceived idea that the island is actually okay. So I definitely think it's gonna come, you know, as a new wave of opinions, which will be nice for the island as well. Very nice.
The law should not have treated you as criminals, and you should not now be considered as such.
In November 2017, the First Minister of Scotland, Nicola Sturgeon, made an address to Holyrood as legislation of practical and symbolic importance was made law.
A pardon is, of course, the correct legal remedy to apply for the convictions we are talking about today. But the term pardon might still, to some people, imply that Parliament sees them as having done something wrong.
Admitting unjustly that the state had committed a wrong and not the individual, Mrs. Sturgeon offered what she called an unqualified apology.
So today, as First Minister, I categorically, unequivocally and wholeheartedly apologise for those laws and for the hurt and the harm that they caused to so many. We will never again accept laws or behaviours which discriminate against you and hurt you.
Meanwhile, on the Isle of Man, a similar course of action to make amends looks set to become law, with royal assent expected by winter 2020.
Dr. Alex Allens and MHK for Ramsey. And it was to try to draw a line, really, and to say that what happened in the past we now recognise was wrong, that people were criminalised, basically for loving somebody of the same sex in a consensual relationship. And it was trying to put that record straight, which is why a pardon is really quite important. And then for those people who are still haunted by a criminal record, they can get a disregard, so that those people who we still know are out there who may have a criminal conviction on their record, which stops them being a social worker, teaching in schools, those sort of things, even to this day, can actually, hopefully, get rid of that conviction and actually get on with their life.
The initial impetus for this Manx pardoning clause was the so-called Turing's Law passed in the UK 2 years ago. Along with recognising how integral code-breaker Alan Turing was to the British war effort, some 50,000 gay men were posthumously pardoned, and as many as 15,000 still living are estimated to be eligible for a statutory disregard in England. However, just 200 applicants have successfully had their convictions removed.
What we've done on the Isle of Man is look at not just what happened in the UK, but also in Scotland, where they had an automatic pardon. And that's the role we've adopted, that there will be an automatic pardon with then the ability for people to get disregards. And when you look at the history of the Isle of Man, we don't know how many people were persecuted, how many people took their own lives, how many families were ruined by this, and how many Manx people left the island never to return. And so I really hope that this will be a start of some reconciliation with those people.
East Douglas MHK and proud supporter of equality and LGBT rights is Claire Barber. She says the pardon is a fundamental part of the forthcoming sexual offences bill.
I think it's also the acknowledgement from government now to say, stand up and say, absolutely, what happened then was wrong. And, you know, we are absolutely sorry for the treatment, for what happened to people in the LGBT community and for those who lost their lives. And there's no apology that will ever be enough for those people and for those families.
A man who knows this debate all too well is another former Chief Minister, Alan Bell. He told me a pardon to those in the gay community is the logical end line to this saga. However, he expects the Manx government to go one more and consider giving an apology.
I would hope that the current council ministers would step back and look at the history of this situation and recognise that a wrong was done to the gay community, a serious wrong, which has destroyed many, many lives and disrupted many, many families over the years. And therefore, it's absolutely appropriate now in the climate of coming together and forgiveness we see in the United Kingdom and elsewhere over this matter anyway, and that the Isle of Man should follow suit.
This apology, he says, should additionally acknowledge the policing policy of the day.
It caused a great deal of distress on the island, and I think it's fair to say that the actions that were taken at that time led to a number of young people on the island committing suicide, and certainly a number of others who were forced to leave the island because they couldn't live in these circumstances. So there was a feeling of fear and of harassment and general oppression, really, coming from the establishment at that time. And I think all of this needs to be brought together and recognised by the council ministers, and an appropriate action be taken to apologise and to heal those divisions.
Many, if not most, see the legal aspect as a political gesture which shows how the island's community has progressed in such a short space of time. And with that in mind, Mrs. Barber will bring an amendment to that debate in an attempt to ban a controversial practice known as gay conversion therapy from taking place on the Isle of Man.
There's certainly anecdotal evidence that there has been occurrences of it. It's something that is underreported, I would say, as is a lot of crimes that are related to equality, I think, can be underreported because people feel embarrassed to report the crimes. And that's something that we have to look at. And that's about strengthening those bonds again with the police, with the law enforcers, that people feel confident to come and talk to them when they have been the victim of such a crime.
Now, I come back to David, once arrested and charged for gross indecency in the 90s. He was one of those who left the island and explains why.
It was splattered everywhere about it. There were cameras outside the court when you walked in, filming us, so everybody was seen on TV. And of course, once they know it out, the neighbours will all be out there shouting names at me and all this, that and the other, and they'd walk by you the other side of the street and spit at you, and it was, you were treated as if you were a leper. I hit the bottle for a while, to be honest with you, and I was really down in the gutter when all that sort of thing started happening and it came out. I didn't think people could be so vile, so hostile towards someone because of their sexuality.
And so do you still carry a conviction from those days?
Yes, it's still on there, still be on my record.
Well, how does it feel for you to have basically carried that for the last 25, 26 years?
Well, it's not very nice at all, is it, having that just because you were gay?
And obviously we talk about the pardoning, which you'll be privy to. I imagine there's an automatic process, but there's also a process that you may have to apply if that's something you'd consider.
Oh, I would, yes. I certainly would.
Right. Thank you very much. Really appreciate
your
time. Cheers. And I hope that doesn't... There were times, obviously, quite impassioned when you were talking. I hope it doesn't sort of bring back too much.
No, not at all. You've learned to... you put it to the back and you try to get on with your life, but it's always there, like, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And how people could be treated like that by a police force.
When this becomes law, which inevitably it will, do you expect the Chief Minister to issue an apology as well as the legislative change?
Yeah. That's a very good question. It is draft legislation. It has to get through Timworld, but I really hope that the parliamentarians here take this on board. It is very much up to the Chief Minister in terms of what he wants to do in a personal statement. But what I'm hoping is that Timworld as a whole, as a united body, can draw a line under the way that people were persecuted in the past for being homosexual, and can actually say that was then, this is now, that our country, our nation's completely different now, and we actually embrace diversity, we embrace people being different, and we will not tolerate that sort of criminalisation ever again.
For the politicians, it's an interesting dilemma, because laws change, things evolve. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I would apologise to anybody that felt hurt or upset by anything that happened during my term of office that I had anything to do with.
Whilst making this programme, I contacted the office of Chief Minister Howard Quayle, requesting an interview on the prospect of an apology. However, by the time of broadcast, I was yet to receive a response.
Why are you having to do all this on your own?
The lesbians and gay community here, the gays themselves, by going public, they're identifying themselves, and their families do live here, I understand that. People don't want to come out their closet.
What I object to is when he goes down on our national day with all his willy woofters from across, poncing about having kissings and that.
No, I've been here 9 years. I've been alone every day. No one's going to stop me.
I cannot begin to imagine how difficult it was for him on that Timworld day.
It was extremely striking and memorable.
I think Alan Shea is an absolute inspiration. I also think he's an incredibly brave man, and I think maybe he hasn't had enough credit for that.
When you look at some of the abuse he got for demonstrating his rights, I think he was instrumental in terms of the LGBT+ community here to actually put a face to that suffering.
As a striking individual protest, I think Alan's was probably unprecedented.
He's someone who, in a time where people were taking their own lives, people were living absolutely in secret because they were in fear for their lives, he stood up and he made an incredibly strong and brave stance. He went and he stood on Timworld Hill and he did absolutely the right thing.